The following is a presentation of Octo Radio, a Star Wars podcast.
How did I choose to win? The question is.
You must learn to see things differently now.
Welcome, everyone, to a brand new episode of A Rewatch Between Worlds, our Rebels Rewatch show, where we welcome all listeners, new, old, as big as a Purgle space whale, or as small and feisty as a loth cat. We welcome all sorts here to enjoy this Rebels journey as we take a dive back into the show that changed so many of our lives, that redefined so many of our Star Wars outlooks and perspectives. We love Rebels. Now, of course, we've been on a bit of a break, but I am so happy to say that returning to the Octo Radio podcast feed tonight, or today, whenever you're listening to this, is my esteemed co-host from the Imperial Senate podcast, as well as many other projects. This is Nikki Kumar. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me back and getting this show back on the road. It's been such a long time, a hiatus we weren't expecting to take.
Yeah, yeah, unexpected stuff. This is the first one in 2022. We've aged significantly.
Yeah, absolutely, and been through a lot. I guess I want to tell the listeners who stand by us and support us and everything. I want to be upfront, tell you guys why we had to take a bit of a break. Short version, basically, in December. My mother was very unexpectedly diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And I guess for anybody who has, had the misfortune of being in these kind of situations, you would know that for as severe as a cancer diagnosis is, the treatment plan is equally toxic by design. So caring for her while she's going through treatment basically became a 24/7 kind of job. So I basically lost both time and emotional energy to podcasts since December. And even now, for the past about 2.5 months, she's been in the hospital. So I've been at the hospital every day for about 70 days. But we're moving forward. We've encountered so many bumps and horrifying and scary times, but we are still going forward. And luckily, I have a bit of a window to escape back into Rebels, because everything about these past few months has brought home why these kind of stories are so important. Because when you go through something like this, when you go through life's challenges, you think about, or at least I think about, I've had a quote from a movie or something that lined up with so many emotions I felt. One of them being the classic Rebels line, "We have hope that things will get better," and they will. And then my other one, of course, is, "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened."
So do all who live to see such times. That is not for them to decide.
All you have to decide, of course, is what to do with the time that is given to you. So I think, all this experience just reminds me why these stories are so powerful, why they should be celebrated. And I think Rebels is one of those ones that, better than so many other shows or stories, tackles the idea of loss and grief and making sure, the idea is like when you feel loss and grief, that's when the dark side is ready to pounce on you. And I think Rebels in so many ways tackles the idea that you don't need to let the dark side win when you feel that, and your strength will shine through in the end. So yeah, it's a pleasure and honor to come back and continue celebrating Star Wars Rebels, because we like our heroes in these shows, we go through challenges and we got to use all our strengths to come through them. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back in and continuing this wonderful series.
Absolutely, man. And so beautifully said, so well put. Everything that you articulated there, I said it at the top, this redefined our perspective on Star Wars. It's a show that we come back to. It's a show that means so much to us. And for my part of just like having been your friend and seen the strength of you and your family and everything throughout this time, as cliche and like saccharine, Saccharin.
I think that's the one.
I think it is saccharin. Yeah, you're right. As saccharin, you know, as cliche and cute as it is to say, the stories were there. Like, I know, like, our conversations over the past few months, we're friends and we talk almost every day, but like some of the best stuff that we've had was like, oh, they're the new episode of Book of Boba Fett. Oh, this is so funny. Oh, this is crazy. Oh, Lego Star Wars. Like, that stuff will always be there as an escape. And as we get older, this story for 12-year-olds lands harder because that's when our brains were pure. That's when our minds were absorbing things. That's why we can take a lesson, you know, something that Hera says to this youth, Ezra, that has so much turmoil inside and is so unsure of the future, and latch onto that stuff. And that's so much of what the show is about. And that's why it's so exciting to be back, especially given, you know, we were talking off air. We were like, ooh, we're coming back on a really good one. This is a really spicy episode to return to. We're coming back to episode 10 of season 1 of Star Wars Rebels, episode 9 of our show. For those of that are just now joining, we do two-parters together, so our numbering will not necessarily correspond. This is season 1, episode 10, Path of the Jedi, directed by Dave Filoni and written by Charles Murray. And you know, when Dave's like, I'm taking the chair on this one, that always says a lot. And this is key for fans of the Force lore.
Yeah. I can't remember. I feel like, was it season three? He like stopped being supervising director or something, right?
Yeah. Season three, he had like taken the bigger job and had been more of an overseer for a bunch of stuff, which I think might have, I don't know what that had to do with. Maybe it was early development on Resistance. Maybe it was, you know, who knows what the deal was there. And then 4, he comes back hands-on again.
Right. So yeah, but I think even now when he was maybe more hands-on with Rebels, or absolutely hands-on with Rebels, like you said, it is still, you perk up when you hear Dave is in the chair, as you said.
And this one again, and Charles Murray and the writing staff of Rebels, you know, we want to give shout outs to them, the entire team, especially season one. They had so much work to do to establish these characters, and they've done such a great job.
Charles Murray, underrated, man.
Yeah,
actually, absolutely. I don't know what else he's done.
But he's underrated for this, tell you. Like this alone, you also had guys like Henry Guillory in there. Greg Wiseman was on this first one. Simon Kinberg was on this first one. You know, people dog on Kinberg. I get it. You know, X-Men stuff notwithstanding, but he'll always have my love and respect for this first season of Rebels.
He's a guy where he's very much like embodies the statement, we exist in multitudes.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Like, there's... no one can judge you for your off times, you know. Like it's you're a fallible human being.
Yep.
We really like coined that as like the Kinbergian principle or something. But yeah, so for those of you joining us for the first time, people returning will know we watch all these on Disney Plus. It's not to say that if you have the Blu-rays, you couldn't follow along, but I cannot guarantee that those things will line up because I don't remember what pre-roll or little, you know, logos Disney stuff might pop up. Disney Plus is where we do all of our watching, and then at the end we will jump over and revisit the Rebels recon for this episode that aired way back when. So if that is everything, do you have any other preamble that you'd like to throw in before we dive into Path of the Jedi?
Maybe just that this was another episode. I feel like throughout the first season of Rebels, there were several moments that kind of felt like a level up, or like in a simple sentence, like, oh, the show grew up here. And I feel like this was a growing point because this is also the return of Frank Oz.
Yeah.
After years of Tom Kane very steadily and, you know, excellently holding the reins to Yoda in animated form, Frank Oz came back to do this one, which is amazing. So it kind of felt like a big step with that. It's a big 4C episode. So yeah, I feel like this episode always stands out to me as being like, oh, this one really took a swing and like pretty much nailed it. It's a great Force journey episode.
Yeah, and to your point about Yoda, both the real world with Frank Oz coming back, but also just the fact that Yoda's here, because it's one thing to have Vader, because that tracks and that makes a lot of sense, and they're building out the Inquisitorious side of the mythology, but to have Yoda here was sort of like teeing up what would come later with Ahsoka and other characters, where putting Yoda and having him interact with these original characters of Kanan and Ezra, it's like, oh, we are following up on the iconic like Skywalker saga stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Even though Rebels technically isn't part of the Skywalker saga, it's directly interweaving with it in a way where, you know, it's easy to have Vader show up, wreck shop, leave, but to have Yoda during his exile conversing with anyone is a marquee event that changes your outlook on what is, like, when he meets Luke in Empire, we now know that he's had these conversations with other young people, you know.
And he's the first, right? Because we haven't technically seen Vader interact with them.
Yeah, you're right. Not yet. We've only seen him in the pilot. And even then, the pilot, it wasn't in the broadcast pilot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a, like, addition. So yeah, he's there, but then we haven't reached Lando yet. No. We haven't reached Tarkin.
I believe you're correct.
This should be the first sort of legacy kind of character coming in and interacting, because again, like, I think we would have talked about it earlier in the show. This show is a big deal because these characters came in on their own, mm-hmm. right? And like when the Clone Wars was here, it was a new medium, 3D animation, new central character in Ahsoka, but she was supported, the whole show was supported by still having Anakin, Obi-Wan, Padme, the Jedi, you know.
Palpatine.
Exactly. Everybody. And so this is kind of like, yeah, like you said, like a cool indicator that, oh, we are going to, like, they're going to feel part of this very mm-hmm. much.
And at the time, nobody could have predicted that Clone Wars Season 7 would be a thing. Mm-hmm. I highly doubt that anyone involved even knew. Even though animation has a big lead time, the lead time is usually a couple of years, which still mm-hmm. doesn't put them at that point yet.
They had the broad strokes that they just sort of come out with, and then that helped inform the histories.
Yes.
The idea that it was going to be made.
Yeah.
No way.
We knew what happened with the siege, mm-hmm. basically, even though it ended up changing a little bit from Filoni's notes and E.K. Johnson's book, but this, having Yoda here, was the first inkling of Dave's attitude of, oh, I'll finish my Clone Wars, no, like it or not, even if I have to disguise it in another show.
Absolutely. This is going to be a good one to watch. I haven't probably watched this one in a long time, so.
Same here. It's been a couple of years for me. So we have this queued up, and I will do a 3, 2, 1, go. Play on go for everybody that is watching along. If you're not watching along, you're just listening to this for your normal podcast consumption, it's still going to be a conversation. It's still going to be completely accessible. The fact that we are watching it does not mean that we're only going to be speaking about what is directly on screen. If a tangent mm-hmm. comes up, if a thought comes up, we're going to explore that. The episode is a guide as we revisit this show. So 3, 2, 1, go. Glory shot of the ghost.
Beautiful. What a ship.
Oh, man. Just feels nice to see these folks.
Yeah. It's like the greatest, most satisfying comfort food of all time.
Mm-hmm. Even right here, I mean, these initial shots of this circular, iconography of the charts of everything coming from this holocron, very much so an inspiration for our own logo, that sort of mm-hmm. world's aesthetic that would come later. This is stuff that New Canon has really embraced.
Yeah, and speaking of the logo, because our logo also kind of went hand in hand with the Ahsoka show announcement logo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those runes, I think, are from this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're
because
correct.
When he sort of goes into that weird space, I think they're like hanging around there, or they're in the temple or something. So
yeah,
it all definitely feels very, very, like you're saying, Filoni's ready to pounce here.
Oh yeah, and like this, like Rebels doesn't get enough credit for things that it handed the rest of the Star Wars creators, mm-hmm. like small things like the Imperial March being in world as in a major key comes from Rebels. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come from Solo.
Yeah, exactly.
Solo took that. Fallen Order took the circular iconography for its like save points and leveling screen mm-hmm. and all that. This is great, classic back and forth between the two of them. You know, we've talked about this on our previous episodes, but Kanan being the master that is also technically at this point not a knight, that was also a learner. Mm-hmm. He's a younger guy. He's not a gray-bearded master. There's so much good tension here.
Yeah. It's two people who desperately need each other who have no idea what to do with each other.
Yep. And I love Hera encouraging him. I think that we've gotten into it a couple times here, but I strongly believe that Kanan and Hera, Kanera, as the internet kids say, is the greatest romance in Star Wars. I think it's so perfectly played.
Yeah. Yeah, it has one of the, you know, it's beautiful, it's tragic, it's got that full breadth of, you know, emotion for an audience member in it. So
yeah,
it is a really strong story.
And then here, this whole speech that Kanan is giving is also just super effective, especially, it's super effective on multiple levels. If a child is watching Rebels at the time on Disney XD and this was their first thing, or if they're finding it on Disney Plus now, that little speech of there used to be 10,000 Jedi protecting the galaxy at the height, or at least at Kanan's height, we now know in canon that there were higher heights, High Republic heights even.
But like 12 million Jedi in this one book.
Yeah. Like the Jedi have side jobs and side hustles. They're cooking stews. But this idea that he needs him to reach out now, because this is the Kanan that, for those playing along at home, has already tried to pawn him off once, you know, hoping that Luminara would be able to take him in. Then we all saw where that went.
Yeah, he's willing to try more. Mm-hmm. Whatever that means to him, as best he can figure that out. Another thing I love about this sort of thing in, that they do in terms of, you know, there's no, or the, like he trying to tell Ezra to like reach for it. Right.
Yes.
And like find it through feeling. And that is just something I love that Dave is the master of, which is doing something and kind of trusting people, which large parts of the audience fail at, but he trusts them to go with it.
Yeah.
And understand it not in terms of explanation, but in terms of feeling.
Yep. In terms of the soul of the character.
Yeah.
Why did he find it with his feelings? Because he's supposed to. Because that's part of the mythic journey of the young person, and because he believed he could, and because Kanan believed he could. And that's all you need.
Yeah.
We don't need the Wikipedia article on how that sense of that sense power works. Now, is that stuff cool? Yes. But that's not a story.
Right. It's not really important to how it functions and what it really means.
And that, again, like you're saying, like that is that's super George, and he passed that down to Filoni, and you see it in all his work. It happens at least 100 times in this show of things that happen. It happens in Mandalorian when Dave is in charge. It happens in even Resistance has its stuff with the Sith Temple and all this stuff. And
I think the peak is, of course, the World Between Worlds.
Yeah, the World Between Worlds, and I think the Lolth Wolf stuff connection to Kanan that is never fully explained because it doesn't need to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's I always just really value that. I think it's such intuitively strong storytelling. It's weird. Like, again, not to be like too condescending about it. It's one of those things where it's like you kind of just get it. Like you're able to get it, or your mind is too closed off to try to get it.
It's the you know, the gamification of Star Wars has had that effect on large sects of fandom and storytelling overall in the age of explainers and listicles and ending explained videos and what does this mean and all this
stuff. You can't do it for this stuff.
You can't. And that I think frustrates a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it's in the language of Star Wars. You know, go back to the Battle of Yavin. How was he able to do that? Was he guiding the actual proton torpedo with his mind? Was it just because he believed? Was it like, that's not ever explained in explicit terms, or the Dagobah cave is probably the greatest example. Children and audience members of all ages understand what is happening when they see Luke's face inside of Vader's helmet. you don't need to explain that the cave created this apparition out of his fears and it preyed on his mind. Like, that's all there in the visual language.
Exactly.
And this Lothal temple is super part of the visual language. The fact that it emerges from ground, from life, from a planet, that it's not, it is a man-made structure, but it is one with the world.
Mm-hmm. And something I also love is, whether intended at this point or not, how important it is through to the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Basically down to the last showdown, the last like big showdown that Ezra faces. This temple is still so important.
One of these hallways is literally in the last episode. You know, yeah. It's been excavated and changed and everything. But yeah, you don't realize until you're on a rewatch that you're like, wow, this is the key location. This show's Coruscant Temple or Dagobah. Like, this is an immensely important symbolic and spiritual place. Hey,
there we go.
This guy he stole that from us.
That's this stuff is so cool. Like, I love when you were watching this, did you think that this is a vision, or like, were you in Star Wars brain, like, oh, there's a vision? Or
I think I knew that something was up, but I didn't know how they were gonna play it, because again, at the time, this was before Force Awakens. This is our first new stuff. I'm like, how much of a science-y type stuff? Like, we didn't know about the crystal stuff that will be in this episode. We didn't know about how they were going to treat new locations. Like, I think this is the first new temple we'd seen in anything since Legends.
I think we also didn't know how hard Dave was willing to go.
Yes, right? Because, like, much had Clone been Wars, made of the... Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, Clone Wars hadn't done too much in regards of Filoni weird. It had George weird with the droids. Yeah. But, like, I think maybe the Force...
The hardest it ever went was Mortis.
Yeah, there we go. Mortis and maybe, like, the Yoda, the ending Yoda stuff. Yeah. And then even with that, it's like, oh, okay, was that George?
Mm-hmm.
Like, dictating to Dave? Or is that Dave thinking that? And so this is very much, you know, Dave's full on calling the shots,
right?
And we were gonna sort of find out how, like, weird he was willing to get.
Yeah. And, you know, what I was gonna say was that, like, much had been made at the time from, I think, cynical fans, and again, we've admitted to our own cynicism. You know, the first Rebels promotional art, the first posters, I was like, oh, what is this kid? He has blue hair, he has a slingshot. What is going on here? And even more, you know, cynical members of the fan base were, you know, you look back now on fan articles or podcasts, YouTube videos, and it's like, oh, it has a reduced budget. This show is why Clone Wars ended. They ended it to do a Disney version, a kiddie version, and all of that couldn't have been further from the truth when you see scenes like this.
Mm-hmm.
With this, you know, for those watching along, it's the apparition, the vision of the Grand Inquisitor murdering Kanan in cold blood, Ezra not being able to process yet what is real. Just really, really powerful stuff.
Again, this is why I question the people who try to compare the at this point two animated shows and say the Clone Wars was more mature because it had more, like, explicit killing. Like, yeah. I think this, the thematic elements of this show make it amongst the most mature storytelling in the entire breadth of things with Star Wars slapped on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's peak. It's so good. And just because there's more, like, enhanced violence in the Clone Wars, people think it's more mature.
It being about war and about skirmishes and about oftentimes soldiers, there is great mature storytelling there, of course, but nobody who was really being honest with themselves, I think, at the time, could tell me that this is not affecting what we're seeing right here. Of, it's not just the darkness and the violence and the fear that the temple's making him see Kanan die. the even more horrific stuff is this: we don't actually want you, we don't love you, you were just serving a purpose. All this stuff of an abandoned child coming to the forefront, mm-hmm. and how he's almost sort of sussing out what's happening to his mind right now, but mm-hmm. he still has to overcome fear. This is immensely affecting. I would love to interview a 5-year-old after watching this.
Yeah. I also just want to pour one out for homie Ezra, since he kind of has a Sabine thing at this point.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I pity him. I'm like, yeah. Oh, man.
That's the brutal.
What an L.
you overhear that at the high school, like, yeah. around the corner.
Also, I don't want this to become a huge talking point because we both know how silly it is. But yeah. I do want to mention, since this is the first time we've been watching, we're getting live action Grand Inquisitor.
That's true. Yeah. The reveal of him in the Obi-Wan Kenobi trailer. Mm-hmm. Has happened during our hiatus from these episodes, and I gotta tell you, I don't mind.
I don't care. Yeah,
I don't care about the
because it's not worth caring about.
It's about the character. It's about the character. Now, will I say that I wish it was Isaac's? I think that's my hiccup. But yeah. They still got a great actor.
So. Yeah, I think it's nothing really to be super upset about, but it is just cool. Another sort of really influential piece of this animated show, like you were talking about earlier, giving liberty to future storytelling with Solo and with the Imperial March and stuff, and now the Grand Inquisitor, a character made for this show, mm-hmm. coming into a live action piece with a legacy. Ewan McGregor.
It's crazy. Imagine telling yourself in 2014, this season one villain is going to face off with Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. And you would have said, what's a streaming service? What's Disney Plus? They're doing shows now?
There would have been Star Wars to do.
And that right there, you know, we've seen that moment done a few different times, whether it's in different ways, whether it's Luke, of course, famously tossing the blade aside, whether it's even Cal Kestis has that moment with Jar T'Pol, but mm-hmm. complete surrender, unlocking his voice. Oh, the chills.
You know what this is giving me mad vibes for? What's Jedi that? Temple Challenge.
Man, I still need my follow-up on Zakai.
I know, right?
The greatest fallen Jedi of all time.
And these are the same lights that Qui-Gon is represented by when Yoda's on Dagobah, right?
Yes, during his season 6 walkabout, which was originally Lost episodes. We've talked about it before that mm-hmm. Clone Wars has ended 3 different times and all the endings are spectacular.
This is great. I love this so much.
Oh, Kiner throwing his beam in right when Kanan recognizes him. It's absolutely beautiful.
There's something so just very, again, whether it's nostalgia for one particular scene from Attack of the Clones or not, but this idea that Yoda has been a part of all these Jedi's journey. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to Fallen Star earlier today, and I think it was Elzar. He was like thinking back to something Yoda told him, and now Kanan's going through this thing here, and anyone else, you know, it's like it's just incredible the way that this one character can just permeate through the entire mythos, I guess.
It's so true. It's such a great point. I love that you brought up the High Republic stuff. That's the furthest back we have with Yoda canonically. And every time that a character invokes his name there, it gives you those warm feelings of mm-hmm. home, of that relationship. And then at the furthest point down the timeline, you know, Yoda talking to Rey, alone never have you been. Like Yoda's relationship and like stamp of approval for characters makes them feel like they're our family because Yoda's our family.
Yeah. And then that incredibly like bittersweet moment between him and Ahsoka and when they're back here in season 2.
Oh,
right? Like,
a little wave.
He's like, crazy. You're okay. It's good to see you're okay.
Yeah, right? Like, it's just like a little.
It's amazing.
And then the way that they retroactively give them another little goodbye in Siege of Mandalore is, man, I think these people know what they're doing. Controversial opinion.
Sometimes it works out. And this, how do you feel about this idea of the master waiting for the apprentice like this to the point of death potentially?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that first of all, the first layer, it's like to separate your actors. Like, yes, they're probably recording on the same day in the same booth, but their scenes are together. You're isolating them too. So like Freddie Prinze Jr. has to carry all that and Taylor Gray has to carry all of his sign. And I think it's super effective that way. You can sort of feel the tension, but then just like the idea in general, I adore that. I also adore that it's for this temple. We haven't seen that in other places, but it's almost like this could be a... Sorry, I had to stop because Taylor Gray was tearing it up. That was
beautiful acting. Good stuff. And this is like part one of a conversation that continues later, right? And it's cool. By later, I mean like end of next season later.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool how they're able to grow this relationship. Again, Yoda permeating through all these characters.
Yeah. But yeah, so the whole idea of separating them, I think, is really powerful because it requires a level of trust, and it also forces the masters to let go because they can't be possessive, you know? So they think from their point of view as Jedi, and that's a much bigger conversation. But the idea that if you believe that they can be everything that you believe that they can be, then you can sit there with some measure of comfort knowing that they'll come back. And that's what Kanan has to get over, is because he doesn't think he's good enough. But he will come back, and that means you are.
That's what's so good about it. It's dual wielding storytelling. Like, this isn't just a test for Ezra.
Yes.
And another thing, just thinking about it, is I wonder, are those dead masters even real? Like, are they manifestations to, again, sort of like test Kanan and his patience? Like, are they even, did masters even do that? Like,
You can't it's just trust really anything cool. you're seeing here.
Yeah.
But you can
again,
trust
it's the
that,
no answers. Like, yes,
but all
no
the
way.
Lessons are, all the lessons come through. And you're right, it's the no answers. Like, even here, like, Ezra receives a Kyber crystal, and you could do 1,000 different little snarky tweets about, how did he get that? It just came to him out of thin air. And it's like, yeah, because you have to look at your Star Wars through the lens of what I'm seeing is also supposed to put me in the eyes of the character. We don't know what actually transpired in there, but we know how it changed these two guys. Ezra's
powerful.
Can we sit in there forever?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it used to feel like a crackpot dream, but if that ever is paid off and Ezra returns to that temple as an adult or something, I'll probably cry.
Yeah. I feel like this is another piece of fake controversy.
The saber?
What? Yeah.
Ezra's lightsaber? Yeah, I remember that being another point, but like, that's something that I never had to come around on. I thought it was rad from the second I saw it.
Yeah. I do think it's funny when people call it the staple gun.
It does look like a staple gun. Yeah. That is always accurate. But I love any saber that is held and has a handguard. And I love that Hera just said, like, he was very specific about what he wanted, about the parts. And yes, Kanan, exactly. It's different, and that seems right for you.
Character-based, baby.
Character, and I think that that's a meta line almost, like, yes, this young man who is also a teenager did just interact with Yoda, and yes, he has a blue lightsaber, but this is not a Luke repeat. This is not an Anakin repeat. This is a young man approaching it from an entirely different perspective, and I like the transition, and we'll talk about it when it's relevant, but I love the transition from the blue to the green that he goes through later on when he's older. Man, that episode's good. I love the Heady Four stuff.
Yeah.
If they ever let me near one of these projects at any point in my life, I'm gonna need like a contractually obligated like a breath of freedom to just let me do stuff. Like I want people to leave my Star Wars and be like, I'm not actually sure if any of that was real.
You want to make the like the Green Knight of Star Wars?
You could not have said it any other. That's exactly. And I had thoughts when I left Green Knight of like, oh, David Lowery Star Wars would be so fire. Like he gets it. Like the ending of Green Knight is so George Lucas, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody and like make it this a Green Knight podcast, but like please go watch it. But when David Lowery in interviews was like, yeah, I was inspired by the Ewoks movie, things like that, I was like, this guy is my guy. Like
that is a perfect ending. It's such a perfect ending. It has no act three. That's how perfect it is. It ends.
Yep.
Like it just, you're like, oh, cool. I think act three is like two lines.
Yeah. It's
like The Sixth Sense. The Sixth Sense is like half a page or a page and a half of like act three.
That is so true. That's a really good comparison too. It's all of this build. It probably has the most lopsided, if it has a three act structure at all. Mm-hmm. Act one is like, but bam, like act one is a tome. Act two is just weird and sort of unsettling and then ends in a, this could be what your act three is, like boom, it's over. Like
yeah it's money. But yeah, that was I remember talking to our beloved Mandalorians about the Green Knight, and one of them I think was like, I didn't get it. And I was like, I think that's the point. Like, the point is, like, you're not supposed to know what's real and what's not, maybe. Like, and I think that would be such a cool Star Wars experiment.
It is the anti-explainer. It's the anti-internet culture type film where things just can't. And I think that's what I like about so much of Filoni's brand of Star Wars is, we'll get into this more of course when we get to Ahsoka, but all these conversations about Ahsoka animation, live action, where is she at in Mandalorian, has she already met Sabine, is she on her way to meet Sabine, what's going on, like those are all fun canon questions to ask, and it's of course it's satisfying to get an answer, but it's still built on all of this ambiguity related to Malachor, related to, did she die, did she go through some force experience that has, you know, unlocked some other form? And I hope we get to see a lot of that with Kenobi, and the reaching out to Qui-Gon. I think that to me has been the great victory of canon over Legends, where Legends was all about explaining and was way too into the sci-fi of Star Wars rather than the ambiguous fantasy of Star Wars, because the original trilogy is not, it's just not like the prequels. You can make an argument for being more sci-fi. It's got, you know, these wild aliens and these planets like Felucia,
cyborg generals.
Yeah, it's way more pulpy. I mean, all of the robots are bad guy. All the bad guys are robots, for the most part. But that original trilogy is straight up fantasy. The villain is in a black cloak and he just like fires magic out of his hands.
Yeah.
Like, how can he do that? I don't know. Like that's been my thing whenever we got to, especially with Last Jedi and Rise, with either the force projection or the passing matter through space-time with Rey and Kylo, like the saber pass. It's like, oh, but that wasn't a power. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. Like every Star Wars film, with the exception of Solo and Rogue One, and kind of Revenge of the Sith, although Revenge of the Sith has those premonitions and stuff, introduces a Star Wars power that was not there. Mm-hmm. There is no force pull or push in New Hope. That comes in Empire, and you accept
it.
Force lightning comes in Jedi, and you accept it. Force speed comes in Phantom Menace. You accept it. And then it's never seen again.
Force like is jump, like jumping a big thing in Phantom Menace.
We've never seen leaps like that. And
where you like Obi-Wan like just
the acrobatics. We had never seen, well, I guess Empire when he's in the carbon freeze, he does one.
That's true. Yeah.
But
that was like small time though.
Yeah, no, yeah, that was
that was like some like he pumped up his Air Jordans and was able to make that jump.
Luke just got hops. But yeah, the prequel Jedi, and then Attack of the Clones shows Yoda absorbing Force lightning, dissipating it,
playing catch.
So almost all of this has introduced a power, and never once has it stopped to like. There's no spell book.
Yeah, it grows as the story needs it to grow. I also think the same thing when people are like, who is the best pilot in the galaxy? And it's like, it's whoever the story needs to do something awesome. Mm-hmm. Right, like there's no answer.
I always go back to Stan Lee. And I think the example he uses is Spider-Man and The Thing. One of them is The Thing, I'm pretty sure. And mm-hmm. he said, people always ask me, who would win, Stan? And I say, whoever the writer wants to win. He's like, if I have Spider-Man and The Thing, and I want Spider-Man to win, he'll win. Like, he went in this whole little speech, and it's like, that's the point. Like, we could all get into, like, our fun conversations about that. I love a Hera versus Poe versus Han type fantasy race.
It's the weird fixation, though.
Yes,
that exactly. Where that gets lost. Mm-hmm. It ceases to be just a fun thing to like geek out while you're playing with your little people together, you know, as kids, and gets instead to like this weird territory of one-upsmanship that I don't know. It's weird. Why do we as people do things weird?
You could have just stopped at it. Why do we do things? Why are we?
Yeah.
we distill it down to its the final form of that would just be why.
Why? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We're going to move on to Rebels Recon. For those joining us for the first time, we always revisit the recons, which places us back in time. This is January 5th, 2015.
This goodness.
Is when this was published, which is just...
In the same... year as a Star Wars movie is coming.
Yeah, this is
we finally entered in. The zone.
It's Christmas. Like, yeah, it's happening now. We had the Thanksgiving teaser, but now it's like okay, it's like slowly but surely, and you know, Rebels has been holding fort this entire time, and Again, we say this all the time on the show. If we could just get back to these types of featurettes, that'd be wonderful. I know they have Disney Gallery, and I know they have their reasons now for wanting to keep stuff on their service, because it's like they're fighting a war. I get that. I 100% get. We've talked about this. Like, when people say, is Mandalorian just that much more popular than the sequels, and that's why it gets more toys? I'm like, no, it's twofold. One, Grogu. Two, everything that they're... like. Mandalorian stuff, it behooves them to make more of that because it costs people $8 a month to watch it.
Yeah. Business, baby.
It's just the way it is. But yeah, we're going to rejoin our friend Andy Gutierrez.
D-Goots.
We are, but we love D-Goots. See who else is in this one. So again, I'm going to do a 3-2-1 go countdown. And here we go. 3-2-1 go.
These office shots are always the best.
Yeah, I love looking at everybody's little cubicles.
That's a dope shirt, too.
Yeah, it's got the Falcon. It's got every type of wing. Path of the Jedi, of course.
Hey, we just watched this.
Recap. We did. Also, it should be noted once again, just like I didn't say it during the episode, but again, Rebels just being the pro at using its locations over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. We get one asset for the location and we just milk it so much. Like that field of the fall grass. Like
again, it's the thing of what's the saying? You know, diamonds are forged under pressure and it's like the magic of stage, right? Where you're able to do more with less a lot of the time. Because you have to get creative.
I love seeing Cad Bane in the background of somebody in the office. Like again, another thing. Like we have Cad Bane in a live action
series. Man, just thinking about this being 2015. When we get to season 2, I will on air reminisce a bit about the Celebration 2015 Rebels panel.
Yeah, please.
Because that was a heck of a experience.
If it's posted still... online, we could even do an episode on that.
Yeah, I bet it's still there somewhere. Yeah, we could probably. Because I try to think about like the top like crowd moments I've experienced it through celebrations. Mm-hmm. And I think the name's Rex is like top five. People went nuts.
That's the Thrawn before Thrawn. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would have been top three up until Palpatine laugh, Rise of Skywalker reveal. It would have been in the top three, but that punch pushed it out, I think. But yeah, good times in 2015.
Carrie Beck.
Carrie Beck, she's accomplished things.
Carrie Beck, to say at the least. Time associate producer. Let me pull up her exact title now. Carrie Beck is now the senior vice president of development and production. So she has come a long way in a short amount of time. Powerful.
Give us a call, Carrie.
Yeah, seriously.
We're ready and willing to assist.
Some guy named Dave Filoni.
I wonder what he's doing.
I love how he's got his clone pin on there.
I love how young he looks.
He's great.
I know it's been a while.
He looks bad or anything.
No, no.
Like, yeah, he's definitely.
He just looks very fresh.
He's transitioned now into like not an elder statesman, but he's not the Padawan anymore.
I believe. Yeah, I think the term is master.
Yes, exactly. Carrie Beck bringing up Dagobah. Man, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, I think Dave is very much a fresh Jedi Knight right here.
Yes,
and now he's definitely council member, but not like in a bad way.
Yeah, he's definitely like right hand of the father. Mm-hmm. Like he's sort of like in a Mace Windu role, and then Favreau is like newer to the council, sort of like Obi-Wan,
but powerful still.
Yes, exactly. Taylor Gray, just a great actor.
He's a fun dude. I remember I got his autograph at 2019 celebration, and I was just like, I didn't know what to say to him, but I was just like, dude, I miss Ezra. And he's like, me too.
Let me ask you something. Do you think you could wear a cowboy hat like Dave Filoni?
As a Texan, I want to say yes.
That's true. That's true.
As someone with a weird shaped head, though, I'm convinced no.
A custom fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eric Geller getting a question in there.
It's a bad question.
We see him on Twitter.
Our stormtroopers aren't elite. Come on.
And now they've defined that even more with the existence of the mud troopers. Like we've seen the actual infantry now.
Yeah, yeah.
So they have made stormtroopers at least one class above.
One class what they were. But even in when Palpatine's like, my finest legion of stormtroopers. But yeah.
The guys on Endor might actually be the worst. Mm-hmm. Which is the great irony of that. I'm sure somebody out there has done like serious like battle analyses.
Yeah, somebody.
Some nerd.
Oh, sneak freebie.
Oh, Idiot's Array up next. This was another big return, of course. Billy Dee Williams coming in hot for this next one. And also, I've joked about this before. Rebels not having the cloth budget, meaning that Lando doesn't have a cape, just doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, it's fundamentally not right for the character.
They should have cut something out of this and diverted money somehow into getting.
They should have shaved an episode out of this out of this season.
It would have been worth it.
Oh man, yeah. Let's tune in January 19th, man. Disney XD.
I don't even remember who I was at that time. Like, it feels like a different lifetime.
I was like about to finish college.
I was a year out of high school, working in a store, doing a program. Like, it's just crazy. But yeah, so there's your Rebels recon for this one. Now we are now Kanan. sitting here wondering about if we're good enough and all that. So I thought, you know, you start off as a hopeful Ezra, and then you slowly realize that you're Kanan or mullet Obi-Wan or, you know, any of our other sort of middle-aged knights that need to find their way. And that, I guess, is the journey. And maybe one day we'll be masters as well. But do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, what a way to end that. I guess, again, having rewatched it now for the first time in a while, it just feels like one of those episodes where, like I said at the beginning, the show got to grow up a little. And we dug into all those great master and apprentice themes, the stuff that not only informs the way Star Wars functions as a storytelling world, but then just the basics of good character storytelling, regardless of genre or franchise or whatever. It's just good stuff, and always a pleasure to know it's ours, right? Like, oh man, like this show is so special to the people who were there with it through the whole thing and who have discovered it in the years after. And it's because of good writing and good characters, like as we saw in this episode, that it sticks so well.
Absolutely. It's resonated with us that we can revisit it now 8 years since its initial premiere, which is disgusting. We talked about this in one of our group chats, but there's a celebration in 2024, they can do 10 years of Star Wars Rebels, which man. I'm gonna show up with a fanny pack and a cane, high socks, like I was there when they the ghost crew. Absolutely wild. But yeah, everything you said, I mean, this is Rebels to me, and it's weird because it's like I don't want to do camps, like I don't want to separate things out. I don't like terms like Mandoverse because it's like no, it's Star Wars.
Wars.
You separating it out is antithetical, I think, to what it's supposed to be. But that's a much bigger conversation. So with that said, I'm not trying to do that when I say what I'm about to say. I think that Clone Wars and Resistance and even something like Book of Boba Fett, like those to me feel like takes on Star Wars, and that's very, very welcome, and they are Star Wars. But I think that if somebody were to distill Star Wars down to its purest form, that's Rebels. I really think that like it is as pure Star Wars as A New Hope. It's just, it just is on so many levels. It's a gold standard in a way that is just so deeply precious to me, to you, to everybody listening. And it's because of moments like that. Like we should give praise to Clone Wars for the way that it approached certain things. I just rewatched some season one episodes, as did you, things like supply lines, things like rookies with the death of Clone Trooper Heavy, really cinematic and really grim and brutal things happen. But to do an animated show that was decidedly aimed younger in its aesthetic, and to have the conflict with the episode be, do my loved ones even want me? Are my anxieties going to be the deciding factor in my life? Like, to put all of those questions first, that is fundamentally Luke looking at the twin sons, that is fundamentally Dagobah, that is fundamentally everything that Anakin ever went through. It's just all of those themes. What do I have to actually contribute? Am I good enough? Is so key to so many of these journeys. All of that is here. It's super heady, and I think that I hope that 10 years from now, when we're approaching 20 years of Star Wars Rebels, I hope that the little kids that saw this first get to talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
In the same way that we talk about our prequels and things like that. So.
Hey, man.
Good episode, man. Great episode to return to. So we will be back with Idiot's Array, and we will continue through our Rebels journey as we get settled here, and as we as we ramp up production on Rewatch. So thanks everybody for joining us again. Welcome back again to Nikki. This was a balm for the soul. Felt right. Felt good.
Absolutely.
When I knew we were going to be able to do one of these, it's just like, like we've said it before, like this to me is, I love everything that I do in the space or else I wouldn't do it. I love doing the main show. And I know like you have ISP and we love that with Charlie and Claire, but something about this show, not us, Star Wars Rebels, this is like a late night cappuccino, a nice breeze.
It's just, it's because I think, you know, other times in shows, certainly in ISP when it's more sort of like current events based, maybe I want to say there's like, there's no agenda to this show apart from celebrate Rebels, celebrate the particular episode we're about to watch, and celebrate what conversation, where our minds go within the context of this 22-minute thing. And I think that alone is just very liberating and relaxing, and all the good, all the stuff that, you know, I think the world of content creation is not all, you know. So yeah, it's just, it's a very, very soothing thing to do. I hope it's a soothing thing for everyone listening and following along with us. So yeah, just, you know, once again, thank you to everybody who is back with us after a few months off. And yeah, we hope you're enjoying revisiting Rebels.
Absolutely. So Nikki, my friend, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on this very chill, very understanding, very nuanced internet?
You can follow me at Nikuicius, NAQUICIOUS on Twitter. You can listen to the Imperial Senate podcast, which I've also not been on for a while. I missed all our Book of Boba coverage. But you can see what the show's about there on the podcasts and YouTube as well. And then the One and Done Film Club, which I do with Alden and Reed, exploring our favorite film franchises. Actually, not even necessarily our favorite film franchises. We just watch stuff. So, you know, we would do that. And you can follow that at One, the letter N, Done Club.
All right. And then as for me personally, you can find me at That Alden Diaz on Twitter and Instagram, THATALDENDIAZ. And that's where I'm tweeting about Star Wars, Dua Lipa, whatever else I'm into at the time, wrestling. And then Octo Radio, you can find everywhere. Octo Radio, AHCHTO Radio, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We post updates, all the episodes there. All the shows still here on the feed. Of course, we'll be covering Kenobi. We'll be covering Celebration. Things are going to be coming up. I will do something. I'm thinking about doing like an audio diary, something like that. So if anybody listening has like an idea that you want to throw my way, no promises, but I'd love to hear it. And then Q&A episode is going to be coming up soon. So I'm going to start farming questions more often because those are fun. So just send them in whenever you've got them to any of the accounts that I just mentioned.
Oh, can I make a quick correction also?
Oh, please. Yeah.
It is actually One and Done Show. At One, the letter N, Done Show. I said club earlier.
Oh, you're right. You're
the
right.
Handle. You're so right. Yeah.
But you said it with so much confidence that
I know, right? I just went with it. But yes. Check out One and Done Film Club.
Yeah, check out One and Done Film Club. We'll be back soon with that. But I have no worries about people catching up in a timely manner because every episode is like 3 hours long.
Yeah. So yeah. You're luck. With us for a while now.
Yeah. You'll be with us for a while. But as for right now, we'll close off with the sign off that Ezra stole from us. Not the other way around.
Rascal.
Lothrat, Lothcat, Lothwolf run, pick a path, and all is done. Good night, everyone.